eyes are blue. Shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva. It's Monday, it's the 14th of October 2019, and this is show number 74. On today's show, we're going to cover issues surrounding mental health. So in a moment, I'm going to have a chat with you about different mental health conditions. Because actually last week was World Mental Health Day, which I think is fantastic. I think it's great that there is efforts to raise awareness of mental health conditions and how we can help people with mental health issues. Equally, it's more than just one day. And I think raising the awareness and educating people who don't have mental health issues is a great way to break down the stigma and help those that do struggle day to day with mental health issues. And also towards the end of the show, I'm going to talk about mental health myths as well, because there is a lot of misconception, there's a lot of stigma around mental health conditions, and we're going to cover that as well. In the middle, we have a special guest interview this morning with Sarah Grant, and Sarah is an image consultant, and I'm fascinated to find out more about what she does, how she got into image consultancy, and how she may be able to help you. And it's great to have you on the show this morning, Sarah.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for having me. Really excited to talk about it.
And yes. I look forward to chatting with you probably in about 20 minutes or so.
Okay. Hi, everyone.
And a quick disclaimer before we start. The purpose of the show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover, and to provide you with ways that you can possibly improve your own health. But this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. Therefore, if you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and very often my opinion. And as such, I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the show. A quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed, which is at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, you can follow the Facebook page by searching the Health Matters Radio Show. And you'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous 73 shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, or go to iTunes. I have a podcast, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can follow the show's podcast. So, got a lot to cover in this first section, actually, so I will be as concise as I can be, but it's quite a big subject. As I mentioned, last week was World Mental Health Day, and people associate mental health issues with things like bipolar or anxiety, but there's a lot more to it than just a few labels or a few different conditions. There is a huge spectrum of mental health conditions, and mental health in many ways is just like physical health. We all have it and we need to take care of it. So when we have good mental health, generally means that we can think, we can feel, we can react in ways that we are in control of, and that we need and want to live the life that we want to live. If you go through periods of poor mental health, you might find that you're frequently thinking or feeling or reacting to different situations in different ways, things that, you know, ways that are outside your control, or even just thinking straight or feeling can become very difficult and sometimes even impossible to cope with. And this can feel as bad as a physical illness, or in some cases, even worse. And the really scary thing is, it's estimated that around one in four people will suffer with mental health issues in any given year. And arguably, it's actually higher than that. It's probably around one in three. And these common problems, such as depression or anxiety, but can also go on to much more rarer problems and more serious issues like schizophrenia or bipolar. So mental health problems, mental health issues are a common human experience. And it's important to make that point, because if you are struggling, then you are not alone, okay? There are many, many people around to support you. And there's also a number of people that are probably going through a similar thing to you. So you're not alone. And in fact, mental health problems can hit people from all walks of life, okay? So no one is immune from mental health issues. But with support, with self-care, with treatment, often the person that is struggling with a mental health issue will get better. So that's good. There's potentially light at the end of the tunnel. But the problem is a lot of people won't get help until they have a breakdown or they have some other serious episode that then makes them feel like their condition qualifies, you know, it's serious enough to be a problem. But the thing is if you are struggling, if you think things are not quite right, you can get help much sooner. And the sooner you get help, the better. So for the next few minutes, I'm going to talk about different conditions. And some of these you've probably heard of, but you may not fully understand what they are. So a common mental health issue is depression. So depression is a feeling of low mood that lasts for a long time. And it affects your everyday life. So this can make you feel hopeless or in despair or guilty or worthless or unmotivated and often exhausted. So it can affect your appetite, your sleep, your self-esteem, your sex drive, and it can have an impact on your physical health as well. Now, in its mildest form, depression doesn't stop you leading a normal life, but it can make things harder to do and it can make life seem a little bit less worthwhile. At its more severe end of the spectrum, depression can actually make you feel suicidal and can be very life-threatening. And depression can come on for various reasons. It can be a breakdown of a relationship. It can be a job issue, perhaps redundancy, or maybe you've lost your job. It can affect women in pregnancy, so you can have antenatal and postnatal depression. And also, at this time of year, people can suffer with SAD, so seasonal affective disorder, and that can bring on forms of depression. So there's lots of reasons why someone might start to develop depressive feelings. Anxiety is another one. Anxiety is when we feel very worried or tense or afraid, particularly about things that are about to happen or we think might happen in the future. Now, occasional anxiety is a normal human experience. But if these feelings are very strong or they last for a long time, they can be very overwhelming for the individual. It might also manifest itself in physical symptoms like panic attacks or sleep issues. And if you go to your GP, you may be diagnosed with a particular anxiety disorder. So we have PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. We have GAD. GAD, generalized anxiety disorder. You can also suffer with things like panic disorders or social anxiety or social phobias. Coming on to phobias, now phobias are an extreme form of anxiety that's triggered by a particular situation. So it might be going outside. It might be a particular object. For example, spiders are a very common phobia. And phobias are often not linked to the dangerousness of that particular situation. So in this country, spiders are not going to hurt us. There are no spiders in this country that can cause us serious damage or kill us. But people suffer with the phobia of spiders. So it's not a particularly dangerous situation, but it's blown out of proportion in their mind. And when that happens or this fear of a particular situation or an object lasts for more than 6 months, or has a significant impact on the way the individual lives their day-to-day life, that can be a definition of a phobia. Eating disorders are and also form part of the mental health spectrum, and eating problems are not just about food. They can have an impact, they can be about difficult things and painful feelings that people find hard to resolve, and then they link those associations with food. So people can develop conditions like bulimia or anorexia, but also they can also, at the other end, they can binge eat and they can put on too much weight as well. So often eating problems and eating disorders are linked to other things outside of the food itself. It can be linked to relationships or particular situations as well. OCD is another type of anxiety disorder, and often this is misused in day-to-day conversations. So for example, someone might say, you know, I've got to switch a light on two or three times, I'm a bit OCD. Actually, the condition of obsessive compulsive disorder is a lot more complex and a lot more serious than just having to check you've locked the door once or twice or switching the light on once or twice. So OCD has two main components. So we have the obsessions, which are these unwelcome thoughts, these images, these urges, these worries or these doubts that repeatedly appear in the individual's mind. And then we have the compulsions that are linked to those obsessions. So these are the repetitive activities that they feel they may have to do to reduce the anxiety caused by the obsession. So the obsession and the compulsion are very closely linked. The compulsions they have to do, these activities they have to do many, many times to try to control the obsession. So you can see how serious that can be. Bipolar is another disorder that was once called manic depression. And bipolar really affects our mood. So we can have experiences when we are manic, or we have these hypermanic episodes that we feel high. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we have these depressive episodes where we feel incredibly low. And potentially, there are also some psychotic symptoms mixed in with them as well. So everyone has a variation in their mood. We have good days and we have bad days. But when someone has bipolar, these swings can be very extreme and they can have a big impact on the individual's life. And schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is another condition, quite a serious condition, but the definition of schizophrenia has changed a lot over the years. And some argue whether it's actually a single condition or a combination of lots of conditions combined. So within the umbrella of schizophrenia, you can suffer with psychosis, so hallucinations or delusions. You can have disorganized thinking or speech. You can feel very disconnected from your feelings, difficulty concentrating. You will perhaps socially isolate yourself and avoid people. You can have a lack of interest in things, and you might not want to take care of yourself. So there's lots of conditions, lots of individual symptoms that can be linked to the diagnosis of schizophrenia. So how can we help those that struggle with mental health issues? Well, I'm going to cover breaking down the stigma a bit later on in today's show. But we need to show sympathy, okay? If you struggle with mental health conditions and problems in the past, you will likely have more sympathy for those that are going through it at the moment. But the way we talk to people, you know, don't refer to it as a phase. Don't refer to it as something that they can control if only they tried. Don't talk about this is, you know, something they can snap out of. It's a lot more serious than that. And like I said, we will cover this, the myths and the stigma later on in today's show. But some of the ways that we can help is to talk openly about mental health issues. We can educate ourselves and others about mental health problems. We can be very conscious of our language. So, you know, that shift in phrasing. So people with mental health illness rather than the mentally ill. Don't define a person by their illness. We don't do that with people with physical illnesses. You know, perhaps someone has a physical illness, maybe they have cancer. We don't define the individual by the illness. We shouldn't do it with mental health issues either. We also need to encourage equality between physical and mental illness. So mental illness is a disease. As much as a physical illness, heart disease, cancer, diabetes are also physical diseases. There needs to be an equality between the two. We need to show that compassion. We need to help them to choose empowerment over shame. We need to be very conscious, as I mentioned, about how we talk with people. And also, if you are struggling with mental health issues, then fight the self-stigma, empower yourself, get the support you need, be a functioning member and productive member of society. Don't go into the shadows, because that just makes that stigma that much worse. You know, you can't control what's happened to you necessarily, but you can control how you deal with it. And also that people that are experiencing mental health conditions to realise that they're not alone. There is help out there. There's professional help. There's organisations like the Samaritans that you can talk to on 116 123 in the UK. There is MIND in England and Wales. There is the Scottish Association for Mental Health, for those of you in Scotland. And there's an organisation called AWARE who operate in Northern Ireland. So mental health, a massive topic, one that I can't do justice to in 12 or 13 minutes. But hopefully this piece has given you some idea of some of the conditions, the common conditions that people struggle with, and actually what they really are in real terms. Right. After the break, we are going to have a chat with Sarah and find out more about what she does and how she got into doing what she's doing. But to take us there, we have a song that's very appropriate, particularly for those of you living in Kent on this Monday morning. It's called It's Raining Again, and it's a classic by Supertramp.
Thank you.
haven't heard that song for absolutely years. What a classic. It's Raining Again by Supertramp. Fabulous song. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. So go to Twitter and you can follow the show's Twitter feed. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can follow the show's Facebook page. You can listen again to this show and previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, or on iTunes. I have a podcast. Go to iTunes, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and all the shows are there for your delectation. So, on to our special guest interview of the morning. As I mentioned, today we have Sarah Grant, and Sarah is an image consultant. Now, I kind of thought I knew what an image consultant did and how they help people, but actually, by talking to Sarah, I found out a lot more about it, and it's a fascinating topic. So, like me, I'm sure you want to find out more. So, Sarah, it's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you, Neil, for having me. It's been interesting, really, listening to you this morning as well.
Oh, about mental health. Yeah, it's it often forms part of many people's story, either directly or indirectly with someone that they know.
Absolutely.
So, So let's find out more about you, Sarah. So, perhaps before we go into talking about what you do now and how what you do helps people, perhaps you can give listeners a bit of background about how you got into doing what you do, a bit about your personal life, and a little bit about your journey up to the current day.
Well, when I was younger, I was going to be a teacher in dressmaking because that's one of my major passions, but ended up getting a Saturday job up in Mayfair in hairdressing, and that's when they said, Sarah, you should be doing this. So basically, I trained up in Mayfair, had a fabulous time, worked with lots of royalty, and it was just really, really interesting. And then I left there. I actually did go back up to London, back work in Mayfair, but then I went off to Australia when I was 25 and did a world tour with my ex-husband.
Okay.
And then came back, got married, had three children, and I carried on hairdressing, but I wanted something else. I started designing and making children's clothes, and it was at that time when Lycra was really coming into fashion. And I know.
I remember it well. I never wore it, I hasten to add, but I do remember.
Actually, it's quite good on men. And then, so I did this with a cousin of mine, Jackie, as well. And we used to do parties and we had a really good time, but it was hard work. Sometimes I'd be up till 3 o'clock in the morning. And so we did that for quite a while. And then obviously the children grow up and lots of different things happened. And then my son was, I applied for the sewing bee and I got through to the second round, but I'll never know if I got through to the next round because my son was a under 23 GB rower, and he was rowing in Italy, and I definitely wasn't going to miss that. But what it did inspired me to get back into the sewing room because I've always had to have a sewing room because it's my, like my safety haven. I go in there and I'm in there. My soul is in there.
Your safe place.
It is my safe place. So I love it. So it's been really good. And then as to how I got into being an image consultant, well, it was 12 years ago that my husband left me and went off with one of my very good friends.
Okay.
So it was a couple of years that left me in a really dark place. But I knew I had to come out of that. And it happened with a friend of mine, first of all, about going on a dating agency, which was really fun, had a great time doing that. But I remember coming back one day and thinking, I've got to come out of this big black hole. And I knew that by doing my hair, putting makeup on, putting clothes on that made me feel good, that I could get out back into this world. And also a friend had a clothing shop in Sevenoaks, and they said, Sarah, they need somebody a couple of days a week. So she said, why don't you go for it? So I applied and got the job, and it was there that my passion kicked in because I just love people. So people would come in and we'd have lots of chats about excuse me, various different things. And I used to dress ladies. I knew they looked good, but I didn't know the reasons why. And people said to me, Sarah, you should be doing this as a job. I thought, okay then. So I went off and explored lots of different image trainers, and I found a fabulous company up in Warwick called First Impressions. And absolutely amazing training, absolutely brilliant. So I trained there for quite a long time, and I actually made one of my very, very good friends up there, because I said to Lynn, I said, where am I going to stay when I come and train? And this little voice behind me popped up and she said, oh, Sarah, you can stay with me. And it was one of my really good friends, Rose. And I'm actually going up there this afternoon after I leave here, having a few days with her. So, yeah, it'd be really nice. So that's how it started. Excuse me, everyone. Started doing that. But I realised that it just made a huge impact, because when I started to train, I thought personal shopping, well, people think it's a bit shallow, but the more you delve into it, and delving into myself as well, because when I was on my training, there was another lady there, Rebecca, who also became a really good friend of mine, talked about NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. And I did the course for me. I did my diploma and I did my practitioner's course. And it was... the whole thing just revolutionised my way of thinking. And I thought, if this is going to help me so much, I knew it could help my clients. Because image, yes, it's about our clothes and how we present ourselves, because we only have that seven seconds.
To make that first impression.
That first impression, but it's also your lasting impression. And I just knew that I had to incorporate it in what I did, because it's not always about the clothes. It can be about, it's about so much more. It's that internal dialogue that we have with ourselves is so important.
So. And that link between the physical, as in the clothes that we wear, and the mental and the psychological. Lots of people wouldn't necessarily put those two together, but you can see it's almost... It's so obvious, isn't it? You kind of think, you know, if you understand NLP and limiting beliefs and things like that, that those limiting beliefs will manifest themselves physically, either in the way that we, our demeanour and the way that we act, or the clothes that we wear. And one can have a massive impact on the other.
Yes. Well, I had one client, and I always tell this story, because, and it always used to bring a tear to my eye. She was about 70 and she wanted an outfit for her anniversary. And I said to her, would you wear trousers? And she went, absolutely not. And I thought, oh, what's happened here? Mm. And she was about a size 14 on the top, 16 on the bottom. So I asked her if she would try some trousers on, because I knew her shape. So we got the right shape. I knew about her wardrobe personality. And as we were going on, I said to her, why won't you wear trousers? And she said to me, because my father told me I had a big bottom when I was a little girl. So she'd spent all that time not wearing trousers because of something her father had said. So I said to her about my coaching, and I did a little process called Timeline. We couldn't fully do it, but it's basically taking somebody back to when they were younger, experiencing those thoughts and those feelings of what her father said to her, and then coming back. And then the older, let's say her name's Sue, what would she say to that younger Sue? And she had a few tears, but for me, they were really good tears. And it was about 4 weeks later, I phoned her, seeing how she was getting on with her clothes. She said, Sarah, I absolutely love them. And I always say to people, you've got to love your clothes, because if you don't, you won't wear them, even your basic top. But then I said to her, do you wear trousers? And her answer was, all the time. So it's that part of my job, not just about the clothes. It's knowing that they've broken through a barrier, if you like, and that she knows she hasn't got a big bottom. And by wearing the right shapes and the colours and styles for her, that she could soldier on through life. So it has a huge impact. So I've had quite a few ladies like that. I had one who had a red jacket, but when we were doing a wardrobe edit and when we picked the red jacket up, she just burst into tears. So I said, where did that come from? So we were just talking, and the jacket had been bought by an ex-boyfriend. It wasn't the ex-boyfriend that was the problem. It's the fact that he had said how beautiful she looked in this red jacket.
Okay.
But in the other ear, she had her mother saying to her that everything that she bought looked awful. So she had really conflicting things going on in her left ear and her right ear. She had a really positive in one ear and a really negative in the other.
Mm.
And there was a big conflict. So we just talked about that, worked through it. So it's that part I really, really enjoy, as much as dressing them and finding out who they are. That's the part. It's about them. Yeah, I love it.
I think the two lessons to those stories are, firstly, it doesn't matter how old you are.
Absolutely.
There is still time that you know, if you've got these issues, they can be resolved and dealt with.
Absolutely.
And secondly, I think how much our parents can mess us up.
Oh, it could have been, you know, a child at school when you were little.
Yeah.
Just saying, oh, you've got a big nose.
Yeah.
And that child will keep those beliefs. But as a and the trouble is, as you get older, even though you're grown up, your brain is in that child still saying you've got a big nose. Until you can unravel that,
that's the massive power of NLP. So, can you sort of summarise in a sentence or two exactly what image consultancy is, and as an image consultant, what you actually do to help people?
Well, it's often about confidence and self-esteem. So, it's empowering them through colour,
mm-hmm.
because to me, colour has a huge impact. So it's finding out their unique colours for them. So it lifts their complexion, it makes their eyes
brighter. Hair colour, body shape, body size.
Body shape, it's wardrobe editing, personal shopping, makeup and their hair. So I always say I give a top to toe
mm-hmm.
and an inside out experience. So yes, I teach them how to do makeup because I want to empower them. I don't want to show them. I actually... everything is very quite hands-on, especially when it comes to the hair and the makeup, because I want them to go home knowing how to blow dry their hair and how to get root left.
I think the inside out is very powerful. I think as powerful as the top to toe, because I think a lot of image consultants deal with the physical, but being able to deal with the mental and the psychological as well kind of embodies the entire person. And as we said, that link between the physical and the mental stroke psychological is so strong, but dealing with one and not the other, I think, you know, you can miss the opportunity to really help that person.
Yes, I mean, clothes can help you forward, but until you deal with that internal dialogue.
Yeah.
So, yes, hugely important.
So tell me a little bit more about your personal shopping service. How does that help people?
When I take people shopping, I took actually a professor from Oxford University contacted me, and I had spent a whole day with him doing a quick colour analysis on him and wardrobe edit and his personality. And he was a natural personality. And naturals really don't have any interesting clothes, but he had so it doesn't really have any meaning to them. But he had an event to go to, and it's people like that. That's when really personal shopping comes in, because he didn't know what to wear. He had absolutely no idea. And his wife said, let's find a stylist for you.
Mm.
So I showed him what suited him. We did the colours, the shapes, the style and everything. We came out with, he couldn't believe the amount of clothes we had. When I take ladies shopping, I teach them that when you go into a shop, look at the colours first. It's for if I go in, I look at the colour. If my colours aren't there, I walk out. If the colour's there, then go and look at it, whether it be a dress or a top. Is the neckline right? Is it my personality? Is it me?
Mm.
If it is, then I'll try it on. If it's not, walk away. So it's teaching you to save money, because most people only wear 20% of their wardrobe, time, and it just makes shopping much easier, hugely.
So it's a multifaceted, I can't think of the word, thing, but colour is one of the predominant factors of it.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yes, I wouldn't. When I go shopping, I always say to people, I would never take somebody shopping blind. Really, it needs that process of knowing, finding your unique colours,
yeah,
your body shape, your wardrobe personality, and then doing the hair and the makeup and the shopping. So, yes, you've got to do the colour first. I would always recommend doing that first and foremost.
And then it comes down to things like style, or the style that suits their body shape and body, yes, and body size.
Because I work with somebody that's straight, semi-shaped and shaped.
Okay.
So I do talks on that, because when you understand, because if somebody is straight, they literally have no waist. Mm-hmm. They're straight up and down.
Mm-hmm.
But those people often have really good legs. Sometimes their shoulders can be broader, not always.
Yeah.
But when they start putting weight on, especially as we get older, going through the menopause, they put their weight down around their torso. And that's often when where they may have worn tops that were fitted, they might have that biggest tummy. How you dress them as they're getting older, when we put the weight on, going through menopause, it could be lots of reasons. So, yeah, I work with the three different shapes, then address all the different areas. Neck length, it can be sleeve lengths. There's so many to go through.
So your ideal client would be a woman 40 plus?
Yes, most of them. I do work with men as well, but they are predominantly women.
Yeah.
Yes, it's usually about 40 plus upwards is my ideal woman that's maybe going through change, has had a crisis. You know, they could have gone through divorce, because the main thing to me is to listen. And that word understand is a huge word. A friend of mine once said to me, what you said to me last night, Sarah, had a big impact. And I said, what did I say? So she said, you told me you understood. So I think it's just listening, not being judgmental, and understanding. And sometimes people just want to talk. When I used to work in the shop, people said, you've got a sign on your head, counsellor, because, and to me, that's really empowering, just to be able to listen.
Yeah. And so many people listen to respond, yes, rather than listen to understand.
Yes.
I must admit, that's one of the things I've learned as a Samaritan volunteer, is so many people just listen to give an answer, as opposed to listen to understand the individual. And I think, yeah, that's when listening becomes really, really powerful.
Oh, so many people don't listen, and you've, yeah, got to listen. And it's about not telling people they should be doing this or doing that.
Yeah.
It's about suggestion. Have you thought of what if, instead of telling people? Because, yeah, we know what it's like when we've got children. You tell them to do something,
and they do the opposite.
Completely opposite. So it just makes you think differently.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. So. Excellent. So we're coming towards the end of 2019 now, obviously on the cusp of 2020. What are your plans for the rest of this year and going into next year?
The rest of this year, I'm working with Karen Davis, and I'm rebranding, because my website's really quite old. I'm not very good. I'm much better talking to people and being with people than doing all the admin side. But it was funny, because Ali Harold, public speaking coach, it's lovely.
Yep.
She was at my house with Gareth, and we're doing videos for the Christmas videos on Facebook.
Yep.
And she said to me, Sarah, you need to go on British Bake Off. I said, really? She said, yes. And I thought, oh, okay. I applied. I knew I wasn't going to get anyway, but it gave me my light bulb moment. And that was to put all my passions together, which I love cooking, baking, nurturing. I love that sort of that cozy feeling. And I thought, why don't I do styling retreats? Ideally, so I've had my photographer doing all the pictures, and the bedrooms are lovely. Everybody's got lovely Egyptian cotton bedding. They've got luxury dressing gowns. We've got the tropic skincare products, which are all 100% natural.
Mm-hmm.
White company towels. I've got slippers. So yes, it's a
sounds
one,
good.
They're going to stay for one night. So in the day, they do a colour and body shape and wardrobe personality. We stay the night. All the food is home cooked. Even the bread I make with my hands. And it's afternoon tea. And then the next morning, I blow dry their hair. I teach them how to do their makeup. So they do it, because they've got to go back. and replicate that. So all the pictures that you'll see on social media, I have taught them how to do their makeup, because I also do volunteering for Look Good, Feel Better.
Excellent.
So that's what's happening.
Lots of things going on.
So yes, I've got to get that website out there.
Sounds good. So if listeners do want to get in touch with you, either the ladies or the men, what's the best method of making contact?
They can get contact with me through my website. Okay. It's the old website, but either
which is
www.sarahjanegrant.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
They can ring me on my mobile, because I like to speak to people. Mm-hmm. I obviously, we've got to do emails.
Yep.
But with these ladies, I always have a good half an hour FaceTime before I meet them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had a few retreats. So, yes, on my mobile number is 077-66-87-1918.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can contact me through social media on my Facebook page, Image Consultancy.
Yep.
So, yes, I'm often on. I don't do Twitter much. I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, email me is the best way. And then I would arrange to have a free complimentary 30-minute chat if I can help them. I might not, but it's that communication. People by people.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely. And your email address is sarah@sarahjanegrant.co.uk.
Yes.
So, and what I'll do for you as well is, when I do the post promotion for this show, I will pop some of those contact details into my social media to spread the word as well.
Thank you. Now, it's been great. I love it.
Well, it's been fabulous to have you on the show this morning. And it's been really interesting to find out not just more about what you do, but also about your background. And as I said before on previous shows, when things happen to people and it takes them in a direction, and then they use those experiences to kind of help other people who are also going through the same thing.
It's a major. But I remember when my husband left, he said, "Sarah, you're lovely to live with, you're kind and you're caring, but you don't need me, and I need somebody that needs me."
Yeah.
That's a huge thing, because I always say to people now, you should be with your partner, your husband, your friend, your workplace, because you want to be there or be with them, not because you need it. Because as soon as you need somebody to fulfill your internal happiness, it won't work, because it puts so much pressure on that other person, and you can't deliver. We have to find our own happiness. And I remember someone saying to me, "You've got to love yourself." And I'm thinking, "Oh, that's really conceited," but actually, I do, and I understand what that means now.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Very powerful. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Neil, so much.
After the break, we are going to continue the conversation about mental health and stigma. But to take us there, it's a classic from the 80s, It's Was Not Was, and Walk the Dinosaur.
I
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show on Monday, the 14th of October, 2019. And I am Neil De Silva. What a great show so far. On social media, you can follow the show's Facebook feed? The show's Twitter feed on at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can like the show's Facebook page. And please do listen again to this show and previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and also on iTunes podcast as well. And as usual, if you'd like to make contact with me regarding any of the services that I provide as a nutritionist, then please do just make contact with me. Go to the contact page of my website, drop me an email, and we will talk from there. So continuing the theme of mental health, as I did at the start of the show, I do want to talk about some mental health myths. Now, with the time we've got left, I'm not going to rush through this. I've got 10 myths that I do want to talk about, and it wouldn't do the topic justice to try to squeeze it into the next 5 minutes. So I'm going to cover some of it on today's show, and I'll cover the rest on next week's show, because it is a really important subject to cover and to give it the gravitas and the time that it deserves. So when we talk about stigma, what is stigma? Okay, most people's definition of stigma is some sort of mark of disgrace or something that's to be ashamed of, and something that sets a person apart from other people. And the problem is when it comes to illness, we don't stigmatize physical illness, we don't stigmatize diabetics, we don't stigmatize cancer patients, we don't stigmatize those with heart disease, or perhaps with one limb, or whatever it might be, but we have a habit as a society of stigmatizing people by their mental illness. And when they have a mental health issue, they're no longer seen as an individual, but part of a stereotyped group. And these negative attitudes and these negative beliefs towards this particular group then go on to create a prejudice, and that prejudice then leads to negative actions and discrimination. And the thing is for those that experience mental health problems, it's hard enough as it is to cope with. They may want to seek help to start that journey to recovery, to rebuild their life. And that can be made so much harder for those of us without mental health issues, who are maybe judging them, treating them unfairly, discriminating against them. And there's a lot of myths, there's a lot of nonsense around mental health that we're going to cover in a moment, or some of the points, and we'll cover, as I say, the rest on next week's show. And if you remember what I said at the start of the show, around one in four people in any given 12-month period will suffer with some sort of mental health issue or mental health problems. And of that 25 to 30%, around 9 out of 10 of those that live with mental health problems feel that stigma negatively affects their lives. So the way we act towards people with mental health problems massively impacts how not only their mental health issue develops, but also how they can cope with it themselves. And this mental health stigma is caused by things like a lack of knowledge and understanding. It's caused by these negative attitudes, languages and behaviours towards people with mental health problems. As I mentioned, it's caused by seeing their illness rather than the individual, which devalues their sense of self. And also, to a degree, it is also lack of resources. And the funding for mental health services compared to physical health services is, shall we say, unbalanced, to say the least. So we have public stigma, which is stigma that we develop as a society. And then we have the self-stigma, when it's the actual individuals, they accept these negative attitudes towards themselves, put on them by society, and they start then to believe that they are less worthy of respect than others due to their mental health issues. So let's go a few, as I say, I've got 10 here, and we'll go through as many as we can today, and we'll go through the rest next week. So myth number one is that you can't recover from a mental illness. Well, actually, that is wrong. You can recover from lots of mental health issues. The problem is when you suffer from a physical issue, it's easier for people around you to see that healing process. But when it comes to mental health, it's much harder to see improvements in a person's state. But that doesn't mean that there hasn't been any improvement, because people can fully recover from even the most severe forms of mental illness with the right support and with the right help. Another myth is that mental health disorders are genetic. Well, mental health is a very vast and complicated field that even the best scientists are struggling to understand. And whilst it has been proven that illnesses like bipolar, depression and schizophrenia do have some sort of genetic, or can have some sort of genetic contribution, it would be wrong to assume that this is the sole cause of the problem. And actually, studies in families, particularly focusing on identical twins, has shown that one twin will suffer with a mental health issue, but the other won't. So even people that have no family history of mental illness can still find themselves being diagnosed as well. So there are links, but it's not a hard and fast rule that mental health issues are genetic. And finally, I'll just cover this point. Mental health illness is rare. Well, as I mentioned, one in four adults, arguably it's even higher than that. It's possibly one in three adults in the UK suffers from a mental illness. And one in three families include a person with a mental health problem. And actually, children whose parents suffer from poor mental health are more likely to experience the problems themselves. That isn't genetic, that's purely just environmental, nature and nurture. And these figures display that poor mental health is much more common than people allow themselves to believe, because mental health issues are, for the most part, in many cases, invisible to the naked eye, but it doesn't make those issues any less real. Mental health and behavioural problems are actually considered to be the biggest driver of disability worldwide. But due to that lack of understanding, that misunderstanding, many people who suffer from mental health issues go untreated, and they often wait until it becomes really serious before they get help. I do need to wrap the show up now, but I've got another 7 points I will cover on next week's show. Like I said, I'm going to give this particular piece the time and the space that it deserves to actually talk through these myths and how we can help others who are struggling with mental health problems. So we're going to wrap up now. All that remains of me to say is to thank Sarah again for coming on the show.
And thank you, Neil. It's been fantastic. Yeah. I've been really, really enjoyed it's it been, and it's listening been a, to you as well.
Thank you. And it's been a genuine pleasure to find out more about what you do. If you'd like to come on the show, as Sarah has done today, and talk about what you do and how you can help people, please make contact with me about coming on the show as a guest. Just contact me via my website. And if you have any questions in the meantime or need my help, please just drop me a line through my website and I'll get back to you. After the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. But until the same time next Monday, I bid you a happy and healthy week, and I will catch you again next Monday.